Sportsnet 650.
Plenty more hockey to talk right now with our NHL insider. He of Hockey Night in Canada and Sportsnet, Elliot Friedman, our Tuesday regular, joins us now on the line from Toronto. Elliot, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you doing tonight, Scotty?
I'm very well. And you know what? Happy Halloween. Do you have a Halloween costume? Does your little one have a Halloween costume?
Yeah, we just got back a few minutes ago. He was Spider-Man, and I was the Hulk.
Nice. I like it. Now, did
As
you
a matter of
go...
fact, I didn't even need a costume. They just body painted me.
I was going to say, did you body paint, or did you go spandex? What did you do? Or mandex in this case?
No, I could go body paint because I am that ripped.
Yes, you are.
What they did was they, you know those shirts they have, like the muscle shirt?
Yep.
I wore one of those, and the mask, although I terrified my nephew with the Hulk mask, so I kind of had to take it off.
Yeah, I've been there, man. I showed up last year. My little girl went as a Minion last year, and I showed up as Gru last year, and I told her the whole day, I'm going to pick you up in costume, and she did not recognize me. She was scared. It took like 45 minutes. It's funny when it happens. Elliot,
well, Rintel, good to see you have that effect on people still.
Yeah, well, you know, you've known me for a lot of years, and some things never change. Let's talk about a guy who's hulking out a little bit in terms of his first NHL coaching job. Travis Green is getting a lot of love from the around the NHL. Ken Hitchcock, the latest to sing his praises.
Yep.
What to you has been so impressive about the way Travis Green has handled this team early?
Well, I think that obviously he has a plan. He sticks to it. He's not intimidated by what can be a very tough city media-wise or fan-wise. He doesn't really care what, like, I think he cares in the sense that he appreciates the fan and everybody who's around, but he doesn't let them dictate what he's going to do. That when I have a plan, this is my lineup, this is what I'm going to do, and whether you like it or not, this is what I'm going to do. And I think that's very important in a Canadian city. And, you know, the other thing I just talked about the other day is that if you're going to do what he's doing with some of the ice time of some of your players or who's in the lineup or who's not in the lineup, you have to get buy-in from your best players. I know it's a big story out there about the Sedins' ice times, but it's obvious to me that he spoke to them about it, and he said that this might be the way this is going to go, and they bought in. And when your two franchise players buy in, the rest of your team buys in. Now, we'll see what happens when they go on their first losing streak. That always makes it more of a challenge. But the fact is they've got out of the gate well. They've played hard. They've won. They've collected points. And when that happens, it gives everybody a chance to breathe easy and say, I understand why we're doing the things we're doing.
Elliot, every single coach wants buy-in. Every single player wants to be able to buy in, but not everybody can bridge that gap. What's the common thread for the quality coaches who are able to do that?
Well, I think one is you have a presence. Like you walk into a room and you have command of it. That's number one. Number two, do they understand what you're doing? Can you sell your message to them? You know, every coach walks in there and says, I'm in charge, but if he's a panicker on the bench or his plan doesn't make sense or he's not prepared when things go sideways, as they always do, you know, people sort that out really quickly. And to me, it's obvious that he has a plan. He doesn't strike me as a panicker on the bench. So they're all buying into that. I mean, winning helps. There's no question. This is a results-oriented business, and any time you win, it buys you time. I think the other thing, too, is you have to have players who are willing to sacrifice themselves and their own goals for the good of the team. And I think, like I said, when the Sedins buy in, it's easier for Green to have everybody else buy in. You know, Besser obviously is a guy who could have done a lot of complaining when he didn't play early. Doesn't sound like he's done it, and I think that sends a message to everyone else to do. Now, you look at Toronto right now, they were going really well. They've lost three games in a row, and even when they were winning, you know, Babcock was like, we got to play better defense. But they were winning in spite of the fact they'd trade chances. Now they've lost three in a row. They got cratered last night in San Jose, and all of a sudden you're sitting there and going, okay, where's my buy-in? And, you know, I think sometimes it's a little easier to do it when you have a team where the expectations are lower than they are in Toronto. But I think we're seeing the example now of a team that said, okay, we're going to do it your way. And a team that, you know, did a lot of great things last year, maybe doing things that aren't typical. They won ways that it's harder to win in the NHL now. And when it goes sideways, sometimes it's harder to rein that back in.
Since you brought up the Leafs, how much of their...
I know people in Vancouver love hearing about them.
Of course they do. That's what they want to talk about first. Sometimes we defer to the Canucks.
I hear people in Vancouver want to hear more about Austin Matthews back-checking. I get lots of tweets about it.
Yeah, you guys should do a whole profile on it during one of the intermissions. That should be on, and Selke talk, all of that. But let's talk about their problems at the other end. How much of that's on Frederik Andersen?
You know, I think some of it is. I think that he's given up some ugly goals, but I think also the team in front of him has given up some ridiculous chances. It's interesting. Like, I've spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks, Scotty, trying to figure out, okay, like, how do teams really grade goalies? You know, what do they use? And, you know, right now, a lot of us, what are the two tools available to us? There's goals against average, there's save percentage. But I don't think teams really do that. I know that there's a software out there, and I'm not exactly sure who does it. But basically it says to you, if the shot comes from here, this is what your goalie's save percentage should be. This is the league average. So, you know, imagine everybody in Vancouver watching that game last night, and you look at that shot from Tyler Seguin that beat Markstrom. There is a software that takes all of the similar shots in the NHL in those conditions, and it says, your goalie should stop this X percent of the time. And I do believe that that is a lot of what teams do to grade their goalies. And, for example, I've heard that on what's called high-danger save percentage chances, the Maple Leafs expect Andersen to beat about 85%. Now there is a website out there. It's called Corsica, and they have their own similar formula. I can't say it's exactly the same as what the NHL uses, but it's high danger save chances, medium danger, and low danger. And right now, Andersen, by their rankings, is average to below average in all of them. Of course, in the low danger, as a matter of fact, he's dead last of the 32 goalies. So, who've played, you know, a specific number of games. So I think it's fair to say he's a little bit below average, but they're probably more happy with him than the publicly available numbers would tell you.
Elliot Friedman of Hockey Night in Canada joining the program here on this Halloween Tuesday. Elliot, Nico Hischier, Vancouver gets its first look at the rookie tonight. What have been your impressions of his first 10 games?
Well, I think he's a pretty talented guy. There's no question about that. I think that the toughest thing for him will be the grind of the season. You know, he's a forward. He gets a lot of ice time. He sees a lot of big matchups. And he's going to be battered around pretty good. And I think the biggest thing is he going to be able to handle it? There's no question he's talented. There's no question he's got a bright future ahead of him. I think he's been a very big part of a team that's been better than we thought they were going to be. But I have seen teams that have looked at him and said, I don't know if he's physically ready for the full season yet. So that's going to be the big challenge for him, Scott.
A guy not seeing ice time, not seeing big matchups down in Florida right now. Different position, of course. Alex Petrovic. What is going on with his rough start? Have we got you there, Elliot?
Yeah, sorry, I'm back.
Oh, we got you back. Okay. What's behind Petrovic's slow start?
Well, I just think that, you know, it looks as if at this point in time that Bob Bugner is not a fan. He's been a healthy scratch a couple of times. He's even some games he's played, his ice time has not been high. I just think he's in a position where, you know, last night Aaron Ekblad spoke out after they lost to Tampa, and he basically said they were all soft and played terribly. So I think that whole defense is going through a bad spot right now. But Bugner is a guy at this point in time who seems to have Petrovic even lower on his totem pole than everyone else. And I think the player's frustrated. I don't necessarily think they're going to trade him right now, but I do think it's a situation that bears watching, because you know how teams in this league, they need defense. And Gerard Gallant really liked him, but right now it looks like he's got a coach that isn't as big a fan.
Well, it's interesting you talk about teams possibly looking to make a move. Florida's not in that critical start situation, certainly doesn't have the fan base calling for them the way they are in Montreal or Edmonton or New York with the Rangers. Of those three teams, which is most likely to make a move early?
You said Rangers, and who else were your other choices?
Montreal and Edmonton.
Yeah, Montreal, I think Bergevin has really tried to see what's out there, and I just think he doesn't like it. I think he's looked around, he's seen what's out there, and he's sitting there and he's saying, there is nothing here that makes sense for our team right now. So, you know, I think they're out. And of course I always worry Scott's going to hang up and we'll have a trade right away, but I think they've kind of, as Bergevin said last week, you know, with the situation has to be solved in here. I do think that Peter Chiarelli has a lot of balls in the air. I think he's, you know, he sent out an email, as Chris Johnson the other day reported, about UC Jokinen being available. You know, I think they're figuring out what they're going to do with Puljujarvi, and I wonder if he gets a call up to try to jumpstart their offense. I think he's a guy who was willing to try a few different things to see what's out there. I think the Rangers, you know, I think the Rangers will be an interesting one. Do they? I think they're a team, an organization that is willing to I don't know if tear it down is the right word, but they want to add prospects. They're really excited about the two guys they drafted last year in the first round. Chittle, the one in the American Hockey League, looks really good. They've got a goalie in Russia who they're really excited about. I think they look at it like, we need to add young pieces. So I think the Rangers are going to be fascinating to watch between now and the end of the season. I think at some point in time, Nash will be traded, and I think they're going to have a lot of questions about a guy like Kreider. So I look at the Rangers, and I see a team that I don't know if they're ready to do it yet, but I do think they're a team that's ready to do some interesting things in order to restock and sort of rebuild themselves, because they went for it the last couple of years, and they used up a lot of their tickets to do it.
And as bad as those starts have been, Elliot, nothing really compares to how bad it's been for Arizona out of the gates. If they continue to stumble along, what is the most likely thing to happen in the desert?
Well, I think they are determined to stick it out. Like the most amazing thing to me about it is, like, what if they scored first 9 times and they've got 1 win? Like, that doesn't happen in the NHL anymore, Scotty. And that says to me that it's the goaltending. And that's why they went out and they got Wedgwood, who's going to play again tonight in Detroit. I think they're a team that believes they made good moves in the offseason, and the lack of goaltending has really punched them there. Now, I do know this. A lot of people have speculated, would they get to a point with a year away from unrestricted free agency that they'd be willing to move Oliver Ekman-Larsson? I've checked it, and I've been told they're not doing it. So if you're asking me if they'd move OEL, and other people have asked, I don't think they're willing to do it. Now, it could change later, but the answer now is no.
Last but certainly not least, how is it that the defending Stanley Cup champs have been blown out, and I mean blown out, 3 times in 13 games?
You know, we have them on in our Wednesday night game against Edmonton. And so I had a chance to talk to Jim Rutherford today. And, you know, I asked a couple of teams that have played them, including some of the teams that have killed them, and I said, what do you think? And they go, you know, it's Pittsburgh. They're going to sort it out. Like, they're the last team anybody's worried about. And Jim Rutherford said today he feels that way too, that, you know, he feels he'll sort it out. And he said, look, I'm not going to 100% blame the goaltender. We haven't been great yet. But Rutherford said something pretty interesting to me. He said, look, we've won 2 championships in a row. There's been an Olympics just before that. There's been a World Cup during it. We have a lot of guys who played a lot of hockey. He said that he saw something from Joe Maddon, the manager of the Cubs this year, that Maddon said he basically didn't get on his team until halfway through the season because he knew that they were tired and they'd been through a lot last year. And he said that's probably the way that he's going to do it too. He's going to wait a little bit of time before he panics or anything like that. I think the one thing is, he said he felt bad for Niemi. He didn't want to blame him. He said Tristan Jarry, they called him up. He's going to play probably Thursday in Calgary. He said it was our plan to have Jarry play half the year in the American Hockey League and then join the team as a backup. He said, look, we've got to accelerate that now, and he gets his chance now. But I get the sense that, you know, Rutherford is like, we're still the Penguins. We're still good. We don't care about the President's Trophy, and we'll be there. And I think a lot of people around the league feel that way, too.
So when the Incredible Hulk gets into Spider-Man's candy bag a little bit later, what's the first selection?
You know, I got to tell you, I think the Crispy Crunch is a truly underrated chocolate. If Max hasn't eaten them all by then, that's what I will go for.
Oh, is he a big Crispy Crunch consumer as well?
He's a kid. He's anything that has chocolate on it.
Elliot, happy Halloween. Best to you and yours. Thank you very much once again, my friend.
Sportsnet 650.